Speaking on this program is Franklin Kemp.
We're studying about how to be salt and light. How to let our light shine that others may see our good works and be brought to glorify God. The characteristics of life that enable other people to see God's imprint upon my life. The image of Christ in which I am to be remade according to the 8th chapter of Romans. We're looking now at some of the essential features that are necessary for that to take place. This morning I talked about the seeing the proper values of life. The next beatitude said, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy." I hope you'll jot down in your Bibles what I'm saying about this, because this summarizes and pinpoints what each one of these beatitudes are striking at. I think if we can get in our mind the crux of what these beatitudes is trying to tell us, we can apply them better in our life. And so the first beatitude says we must see ourselves as we really are, unworthy of God's blessings and unworthy of God's grace. The second beatitude tells us we must see sin as it is and all of its ugliness and lead us to abhor sin. The third beatitude tells us that we must see ourselves in relationship to others. We do not live in a world isolated from other people, but have to live with them and, of course, live in the church. And then to see the values that are the greatest things in life, which have to do with righteousness. But then, blessed are the merciful. What does that beatitude tell us? This beatitude points to the importance of seeing the needs of others and our opportunities to serve them. That's what that beatitude really says. I want to demonstrate and show you from the Bible tonight that that's true. This beatitude will not be practiced in our lives except in the order in which we've already seen them. We do not just decide, well, I'm going to be merciful like this beatitude tells me to be, and out of that develop a merciful attitude. There are some things that precede our being merciful. And so when he said, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy," it is a reminder that something's happened in our life. There's something that we understand that produces that attitude of being merciful toward others. I started yesterday morning looking through the concordance, the word mercy. I was especially interested in looking at it in the book of Psalms. And I was impressed. In fact, I started to write them down and then I was going to count them, but something happened that I didn't do it. But I was impressed by the number of times that I found the phrase, "Have mercy on me, O God." And it's just over and over and over in the Psalms. Well, how can one then think about and plead, "Have mercy on me, O God"? The answer is found in the realization that I am unworthy of God's blessings and His grace. But there's an interesting contrast between grace and mercy. What is the difference? They are two sides of the same coin and of the same character of God, but they present God from a different standpoint. Grace has to do with undeserving favor, but mercy has to do with the tender pity of God. And wherever there's mercy, there is the attitude of pity. And when the psalmist cried out, "Have mercy on me, O God," he's pleading, "Really have pity on me. Understand my situation." And so, we should think about mercy from this standpoint. I do not believe that there's any greater blunder that can be made in life than for one to think that he is acceptable unto God because he is religious and yet is unmerciful. And you know, it's easy to be unmerciful. In fact, that's what will happen unless we allow ourselves to really understand how much I need the mercy of God. And how the pity of God, the tender pity of God, has been extended unto me. If I think that I'm pretty good, I'll never really appreciate the meaning of God's mercy, and I'll never be able to be merciful toward others. In Jeremiah 6 and 23, Jeremiah describing the Babylonians that would overrun Judah and Jerusalem, said, "They are cruel and unmerciful." And so you look at the relationship. Cruelty and a lack of mercy are twins. And when we are harsh and cruel toward others, whatever the situation may be, there is an indication that we are lacking in understanding our own need of mercy. Think about the goodness of God toward us. God is not cruel and harsh and hard toward man, but rather there is the tender mercy, the tender pity in the realization of the situation that we're in, and looking for an opportunity to serve and an opportunity to give and an opportunity to help. And that's exactly what the idea of mercy means. And so when he said, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy," that tells me that unless this attitude is in my life, then I'm going to be lost, because I can't go to heaven without God's mercy. If I'm ever saved, I'm going to need God's tender pity toward me. And therefore, it is vital that I know what this is and that it's in my life, and that I learn to practice it. And I do that because I have come to recognize the importance of God's mercy in my life. Let me read you from two different places in the book of Matthew. Give you an example of this. Let me read from Matthew 9. I want you to think about now that these are religious people to whom Jesus is talking. Listen to what he said. Beginning in verse 1. "And he entered into a ship and passed over and came into his own city. And behold, they brought to him a man sick of the palsy, lying on a bed. And Jesus, seeing their faith, said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, be of good cheer, thy sins be forgiven thee. And behold, certain of the scribes said within themselves, This man blasphemeth. And Jesus, knowing their thoughts, said, Wherefore think ye evil in your heart? For whether is it easier to say, Thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, Arise and walk? But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath power on earth to forgive sin. Then he said to the sick of the palsy, Rise, take up thy bed, and go into thy house. He arose and departed to his house. But when the multitude saw it, they marveled and glorified God, which had given such power unto men. And as Jesus passed forth from thence, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at receipt of custom, and he said unto him, Follow me. And he arose and followed him. And it came to pass, as Jesus sat at meat in the house, behold, many publicans and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto his disciples, Why eateth your master with publicans and sinners? But when Jesus heard that, he said unto them, They that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. Now I want you to note what he said. But go ye and learn what this means. I will have mercy and not sacrifice, for I am not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. Now mark it. It was to religious leaders that Jesus said, Go and read Hosea 6 and 6 and learn what that means. Turn back to the 6th chapter of the book of Hosea and let's just see the context in which that's found. Beginning in verse 4. O Ephraim, what shall I do unto thee? O Judah, what shall I do unto thee? For your goodness is as the morning cloud, and the early dew it goeth away. Therefore have I hewed them by thy prophets, and I have slain them by the words of my mouth, and thy judgments are as light that goeth forth. For I desired mercy and not sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings. Can you not see in that what he's saying? A lack of mercy meant they didn't understand the meaning of sacrifice. Every sacrifice that they offered was a reminder of their need of God's mercy. For it was a reminder of their sinfulness. The book of Leviticus lists 5 different kinds of sacrifices that were offered. All of them were reminders of man's frailties and his weaknesses. And one of them is even called a sin offering. And therefore, the very offering of sacrifices should have called to their mind the fact that I am unworthy, and therefore I stand in need of mercy. And created within their hearts and their minds the attitude of the psalmist when he cried out, "Oh my God, have mercy on me." But they didn't see it that way. Their idea was that we offered sacrifice and we've gone through this ritual. And without seeing the need of God's mercy, then they didn't know how to extend God's mercy. And the verses that follow that talk about how they would mistreat people and that there were those that had blood on their hands. But look again in the same book, turning to chapter 12. The Pharisees again are the ones that are criticizing Christ. His disciples had walked through the field of grain. They had plucked grain and had eaten it on the Sabbath day, which indeed did not violate the law, but rather the transgression of the elders. And then they were criticizing Christ and His disciples for that. And then Jesus reminded them again in verse 7, "But if ye had known what this meaneth, I'll have mercy and not sacrifice, ye would not have condemned the guilty." You see, they made a sad mistake in what the criticism they made of the disciples, who were hungry and therefore ate. And there's not anything wrong with it. Jesus said they were guiltless. But I call attention to the fact that these were religious people. They had the Old Testament. They could read Hosea 6 and 6. "But I'll have mercy and not sacrifice." But they did not know how to be merciful, because they had no sense of the need of God's mercy. They had never pled, "Oh my God, be merciful unto me." Luke 18, the Pharisee came into the temple. Not one word is said about the need of mercy. He said, "I thank thee, God, that I'm not like other men, like that publican over there. I'm proud of all that I do, and I know you're proud of me." Not one word that would indicate he stood in need of mercy. And because he felt no sense of the need of mercy, he could look at that man over there and say, "I'm glad that I'm not like that man," showing he was unmerciful. And therefore Jesus said, the publican went out of his house justified rather than the Pharisee. And then again in the 18th chapter of the book of Matthew, Jesus asked Christ, "How many times shall I forgive my brother? 7 times? I'm going to be real merciful. When someone has offended me or trespassed against me, I'm going to really show mercy toward him. I'm going to forgive him 7 times." Jesus said, "No, not 7, but 7 times 70. That is, there is no limit to it. Or if we begin to count, think about the situation that I'd be in as I stand in need of the mercy of God. When I realize that day by day as I go before the throne of God's grace and I plead, 'Oh God, be merciful to me.' If indeed I do that, and I need to, but if I do that, day after day, suppose someone offends or hurts and they come and say that I'm sorry, why then should I place any limit on the number of times? Because I've been going day after day. I should understand that I'm glad to do that because that's just exactly what I've done today. I have wronged my God, come short of His glory. And in doing so, I've gone to Him and pled for His mercy. And because of the impact that that's made upon my life, gladly, I extend mercy and forgiveness unto you." The thing that I'm talking about now gets close to where we live. This is what it takes to enable frail, weak humanity to live together in peace and in harmony, to be able to get along with one another and not let our weaknesses and our frailties rub each other the wrong way, and enables us to be able to understand how that we need to make the proper correction and how that we can do the right thing in making that correction. But let me show you again. Turning to the 10th chapter of the book of Luke, we have a story that was given by Christ. A man came to Christ, and a lawyer stood up and tempted him, saying, "Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And he said unto him, "What's written in the law, and how readest thou?" And he answering said, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy strength, with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself." And he said unto him, "Thou hast answered right, this do, and thou shalt live." But he willing to justify himself said unto Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" And Jesus answering said, "A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, which stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. And by chance there came down a certain priest that way, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side." Now you see, there's the man that had been to the temple and had offered sacrifice. And that sacrifice should have called to his mind a reminder of the mercy of God. But it hadn't fazed him one bit. Here was a man over here. He saw a need and an opportunity to serve. And unmerciful, he passed by and ignored it. Likewise, a Levite, when he was at the place, came and looked on him and said, and passed by on the other side. So here the priest and the Levite had been to the place of sacrifice and on their way back home. Here's one that is in need, stripped and robbed. An opportunity to serve, an opportunity to give. And he just passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him. He went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring in oil and wine, set him on his own beast, and brought him to an inn, and took care of him. And on the morrow, when he departed, he took out 2 pence, and gave them to the host, and said unto him, "Take care of him, and whatsoever thou spendest more, when I come again, I repay thee. Which now of these three thinkest thou was neighbor unto him that fell among the thieves?" And he said, "He that showed mercy on him." And Jesus said, "Go thou and do likewise." How did I define being merciful in the very beginning? Having tender pity, giving and serving one that's in need. And here it is. And that's exactly what this man said, "I see in this." Here was one that showed mercy. Why? Because the Samaritan was a despised man. And he realized that he stood in need of mercy. And therefore, he was willing to give and to serve and to show mercy toward one that was in need. Am I like the priest and the Levite? Have I been to the sacrifice today as I've been in the service of God until I leave here? Will I leave and there'll be those opportunities to serve and there'll be people that are in need and I can turn my eyes away and pass them by? If so, the mercy of God has not had its impact upon my life. Listen to what Psalms 37 and 21 say. It says, "The wicked barreth and payeth not again, but the righteous showeth mercy and giveth." I hope you'll mark that passage in your Bible. The wicked barreth and payeth not again. Selfish. But the righteous, what about him? Showeth mercy How does He show mercy? In giving. He sees opportunities, needs, and He gives. He serves. That's what this beatitude says. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. When I stand before God in judgment, I'm going to stand in need of mercy. But unless the mercy of God has so affected my life until, as a righteous person, I show mercy, and that mercy means that I give and provide the needs of those that stand in need of mercy, then the situation that I'll be in, I'll stand before Him without mercy. And so, I'd like for you to think about Psalms 109. This psalm is quoted by Peter in Acts 2 in reference to Judas. Psalms 69 and Psalms 109 are the psalms that are quoted in referring to Judas. But I want you to note two verses in Psalms 109. Verse 12. Look at verse 12. Let there be none to extend mercy unto him, neither let there be any to favor his fatherless children. Now, if you look at the verse above that, it says, let the extortioner catch all that he hath, and let the stranger spoil his labor. Now, see, that's the attitude that Judas had. Greedy. You remember when Mary poured the ointment out on Christ? He said this could have been taken and given to the poor. But John 12:5 says he didn't want to give it to the poor. He was a thief. He had the bag. He wanted it for himself. But I want you to look also at verse 60. Because that he remembered not to show mercy, but persecuted the poor and the needy man, that he might even slay the broken in heart. Look at what happened. There's Judas, and when Mary poured the ointment out on Christ, he said that could have been taken and given to the poor. All the time he is wanting to get his greedy hands on that. And then he tells us that he persecuted the poor and the needy man, that he might even slay the broken in heart. And there you have a picture of him selling Christ for 30 pieces of silver and going to the cross. Read Acts 1, where Peter said that Judas by transgression fell, that he might go to his own place. Why? He was a man without mercy. He felt no need of the mercy of God. Like the Pharisee, self-righteous in his attitude, materialistic in his thinking, was willing to complain about the act of Mary. All the time using his money, stealing money from the treasury of the Lord for his own selfish purposes. No wonder John 17 said that all of ones that had been given to Christ have been kept except the son of perdition, the reverend Judas. How is Judas described? One that did not remember mercy. Being unmerciful, there was no mercy for him. But listen again. Let me read to you from the fourth chapter of the book of Daniel in verse 27. Daniel is down in captivity. Being down in captivity, he is now talking to the king. Listen to what he says to Nebuchadnezzar. Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness and thy iniquities, by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. The margin says, if it may heal the error of their way. Daniel said, let the impact of God in your life, turning from idolatry and iniquity, and accepting the God of heaven and His mercy, be such that will cause you to remember the poor, to help the needy. And he said, in that, righteousness consists. But I want to read one other passage. James, in writing, in James chapter 2 and verse 13, says, "For he shall have judgment without mercy, that showed no mercy, and mercy rejoiceth against judgment." It's truly sobering when I read that statement. Have I passed along through life unmerciful? Have I made judgments that was unworthy and that shut up the bowels of mercy in my life? James said, if I have, when I stand before God in judgment, there'll be no mercy for me. No wonder Jesus said, "You're the salt of the earth and the light of the world." How? "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works." Look at what we've learned about mercy. It sees opportunities and needs and serves. The priest and the Levite, being unmerciful, saw no need and offered no service. I pray God that He'll forgive me for living a long time and not knowing any better and not realizing that there were occasions when a failure to appreciate His mercy in my own life and the need of mercy from the great heart of God, I have been unmerciful. Close my eyes to needs and doors of opportunity and fail to serve. But God being my helper, I shall try to live day by day, conscious of my own frailties and weaknesses. As I bow before Him, and let me learn from the psalmist and say, "Oh my God, have mercy on me." As I rise from knees where I've pled with God to be merciful toward me, to let that cause me to open my eyes and to see doors and opportunities that are round about me, and with a heart full of pity, extend mercy. Don't you know, if we do that, there's no way that the world will not see God in our lives. And there's no way that will not be salt and light. May God help each of us as members of the church at Eastchester to become salt and light, or to be salt and light, by imbibing these attitudes into our life, letting the world see God through us. Do you stand tonight realizing your need of God's mercy? Can you cry out, "Oh God, have mercy on me tonight"? If you have never obeyed the gospel of Christ, you need His grace and His mercy. And His tender mercy is extended toward you. With pity, God looks at your misery and sin. In fact, I should have said in the very beginning, grace is undeserved favor for those that are undeserved, for the undeserving. Mercy is for the miserable, because sin brings misery. And God's mercy, out of His tender, loving heart, is intended to provide the remedy for our misery. Would you like to get out of yours tonight? You can, through obedience to the gospel of Christ. If you believe that He is the Son of God, repentant of your sin, will confess your faith in Him and be baptized, that mercy will be yours. That grace will be yours. You can leave, touched by His mercy, seeing doors of opportunity to serve others, and thereby being merciful. Stand before Him, and when you plead at the judgment bar of God, "Oh my God, be merciful unto me," that plea will be heeded. And through God's mercy, we can enter into the realms of everlasting life.
Yes.